And now it's time for the political junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
Republican Senator Richard Lugar's calls for a troop withdrawal in Iraq shake things up here in Washington. Some are calling it a watershed moment. It's deja vu on immigration. The Senate agreed to pick up where they left off on the bill 3 weeks ago. The question now is, can the president get it to his desk? And two Democrats roll out new ad campaigns, and the draft Al Gore committee takes their message to the airwaves in Iowa. Meanwhile, Elizabeth Edwards and Ann Coulter go toe-to-toe on live TV. Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. If you have questions for the political junkie about any of that or about tomorrow's Democratic debate here in Washington, D.C., we'll talk with one of the panelists on that event. What question do you want to hear? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also post your comments at our blog, npr.org/blog of the nation. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor and our political junkie. You can check out his weekly column at our website, npr.org. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And let's start with Senator Lugar's remarks on Iraq. This is the ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, longtime chairman of that committee, one of the most respected, hardly a bomb thrower. And in a speech that came as a surprise to the White House, at least late on Monday night, he made a very important address on Iraq.
I think that's the key, though. The fact is that he is not a grandstander. He's not somebody like Chuck Schumer who will let everybody know that he has a speech planned in the next 5 minutes. He's somebody who obviously thought about this long and hard. He's had reservations about the Bush war policy for some time, but has kept that skepticism private. But this time, I guess he felt that, you know, it's just time to speak out. He just says that he doesn't see a winnable conclusion. He said that some troops should come back, and very well, you know, you talk about a possible watershed moment. This could give other Republicans the cover to come out and oppose their president on the war.
And he also said, we're running out of time here. We're going to get caught up in the partisan politics of the presidential campaign by September at the latest. That, of course, is when General Petraeus is expected to make his update report to Congress, the moment that the administration has mentioned all along. Let's wait until September.
Right. And most people feel that there's not going to be much of a change in the outlook or the ultimate outlook on the war by September. So I think Lugar was trying to head off that so-called deadline and make the case now.
Mm-hmm. And we did... I don't know if it was connected to Senator Lugar's speech or not, but another Republican senator, George Voinovich of Ohio, sent the White House a letter saying, look, this isn't working the way you said it would.
And again, what I'm more interested with Lugar, the fact is that he's a very respected person on foreign affairs, but unlike some Republicans, you could say, well, maybe they're nervous about 2008 reelection campaigns. So you mentioned people like John Sununu in New Hampshire and Susan Collins in Maine and Norm Coleman in Minnesota, who have been speaking out against the war. And some people say, well, is it a coincidence that they are reelection terms are up. But, you know, Lugar was reelected last year with no opposition. I mean, the guy, the first time in history a Republican senator in Indiana had no opposition. Extremely popular. He doesn't have to worry about any kind of a fallout back home.
Well, let's go to the other side of popularity and to the immigration bill, which seems to be highly unpopular yet revived in the Senate. Is second time the charm?
I don't think so. I really think that, yes, they agreed to bring it back. I think the Bush administration clearly wants it. We talk about legacies. The Bush administration would love this as the final legacy. But there's tremendous opposition to this bill, and certainly among Republicans in the House. There was a vote yesterday. I think it was 114-23. House Republicans voted against it, whatever the Senate version is. And there's still a lot, even though that, you know, 64 senators voted yesterday to let the debate go on, there are still many Republicans who say, no, we're not going to let this go through, and we're going to do everything we can to kill it.
Tomorrow night at Howard University here in Washington, D.C., we'll have the first of two presidential fora, this time with the Democrats. The Republicans take their turn in the fall. One of the panelists asking questions tomorrow is NPR's Michelle Martin. She hosts our Tell Me More program and joins us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Neil.
Any idea? You're in this great position and this terrible position. Yeah, I assume you've been scribbling and scratching out questions all week.
Months, weeks, and which is why I'm here. It's a Tom Sawyer moment. I'm inviting you all to help me paint the fence. And because it's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
And of course, so we want you listeners to come up with that
absolutely
hard-hitting question
absolutely
on foreign affairs or exposing the... How do you ask 10 people a question?
Quickly. Well, part of the idea with this debate, and I understand that some people are a little frustrated with the whole debate thing right now, because mm-hmm. we talked about this on my program today, that some people think it's just too early. I can't focus right now. But there have already been five of these. I think three on the Democratic side, two on the Republican side. And a lot of the focus has been on foreign policy, obviously on Iraq. So part of what we're trying to do is open up some of the other issues, which are very important to the American public, which have not been as much discussed. And mm-hmm. so I can sort of offer that up. And you know what? I tell you what's been interesting, a surprise to me. This is my first time doing this. I was a questioner in a forum last cycle, but it was very different. Anyway, very early in the cycle. So people have been calling me already with questions and sending questions into the blog.
What's the best one you've had so far?
Well, a lot of people are very interested in education because they don't feel it's been adequately discussed so far. Some people are interested in immigration, I don't know that people really even have questions about immigration at this point. It seems like everybody already knows what they think. And the questions I'm getting so far are, don't you think, or mm-hmm. why don't they, which kind of tells you it's not really a question. So education is a big topic. Also the question of job growth. Are they paying enough attention to the economy? Those are things people very much on people's minds.
800-989-8255. If you have a question you'd like Michelle Martin to ask tomorrow night. And let's begin with Jesse. Jesse calling us from Detroit in Michigan.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
I had a question for your guest about sort of the format of the debates. We've had, I think, more candidates this year than ever before, sort of with this inclusive policy. I'm curious to what extent that's a success and if we'll ever see this again.
Well, it's not really a question. I don't know if you're directing that to me or to Ken or to Neil, but I don't think I think it's historical circumstances. I mean, it's the first election cycle in what, Ken, help me, like 20-some years where you haven't had either a sitting president running for re-election or a vice president running to succeed the president.
Right.
So half a century. So I think it's historical circumstances. It's also the fact that the issues are so pressing that it has drawn people into the field. Some of these people clearly don't expect to win, but they want to make a statement about, you know, the war or mm-hmm. about the state of politics today. I don't know. People have different opinions about this. Some people think the more the merrier. These debates are a forum for discussing ideas. Some people think it's ridiculous. Our thing is all comers are welcome. We did not set a threshold for who would be invited to this debate in terms of the polls. How would you do that at this stage?
Right. At this stage, it just seems too early to do that. And that, Ken, it ends up being these cavalry charges where, you know, you have 8 or 10 different people there at the debate. Has answered Jesse's question. Has it been successful?
Well, I think it has only because the people who are paying attention do have some kind of a sense of who these candidates are. But the problem is for those who are not paying attention now, this will be over before you know it, because by early February, you're going to have 25, 30 primaries and caucuses, and half the field we see now will no longer be there. So I would suggest, certainly at least in the early states, which will make such a big difference, like Iowa and New Hampshire, now is the time absolutely to pay attention to these forums, these debates, because you're really learning who the next president of the United States could very well be.
Hmm. Jesse, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Michelle, I wonder, as you're in these, I can't help but feel sometimes that you see some candidates not getting any questions. Mm-hmm. If it happened, would you throw Ron Paul a bone? Would you go over to Dennis Kucinich and say, you haven't had a chance to talk yet. What do you think of this?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because you're a mother. You worry about people.
I'm soft-hearted. Yeah, exactly. No, I think it speaks to, you know, what your philosophy is about what debates are for. I kind of am in the free exchange of ideas school, mm-hmm. because I think that you can affect a public discussion just by the quality of your discussion. I mean, like Al Sharpton in the last election, like everybody knew Al Sharpton was not going to be president, but he was an interesting presence in the debates and had interesting things to say that I think affected public discourse in some ways, helped to frame sort of discussion. So I don't know. I think it depends, but it depends on whether I think the other issue for us is follow-ups. I think mm-hmm. part of what's frustrating about having so many candidates is that if a question isn't fully answered, how is that pursued? I think that's something that we're going to be focusing on.
Well, let's see if we can get Tarouk on the line. Tarouk's calling us from San Antonio in Texas.
Hi. I had a question for your guest. I just wanted to know if she thinks will candidates ever answer questions directly, or will they always divert questions to some topic they already pre-planned to talk about?
Yeah, they're pretty slick, Michelle. You know, that's a fascinating question, Michelle Martin. You know, but the really interesting thing is, and then they go on to say what they plan to say anyway.
But that's what you're free to evaluate as a listener. That's what I want you to do. That's where I want you to be on your game. That's what I want you to be paying attention to. Do you think they're paying attention to your question? Do you feel with it? Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Tarouk, thanks very much.
You know what I notice is something also a frustration in debates is that the media, sometimes the hosts seem to play the front-runner game. So if we think that Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama are the front-runners, perhaps John Edwards, then they focus their questions on them, and then they'll throw a Kucinich or a Gravel a bone. But there are serious candidates also, like Joe Biden, like Chris Dodd in the Senate, a combined total of over 50 years, and they say, wait, why are we not getting the attention we need? And I wonder what pressures, Michelle, there may be on you to make sure that everybody has heard, even though there are nominal front runners in this race.
Well, thankfully, I'm one of the questioners. There are three questioners, Dwayne Wickham, Ruben Navarrete, who's also a regular on my show, and me, and the moderator is Tavis Smiley, who is a name which will be familiar
to many NPR
listeners. Yep. So, you know, that's Tavis is the moderator. I think he's got the hard job.
That's his job, yeah.
Yeah, it's his job. I'm passing the buck.
We wish you a good night's sleep, and good luck with that, Michelle.
Thank you.
Michelle Martin, NPR's Tell Me More. She's the host of that program and one of the panelists on tomorrow night's Presidential Candidate Forum, which will air on PBS. We're talking with Ken Rudin, our political junkie. Again, you can go to our website to read his political junkie column. That's at npr.org. And you're listening to the Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Andrew. Andrew with us from Chaska in Minnesota.
Hello there.
Hi there.
Hi. I'm calling with a question about Vice President Cheney.
Go ahead.
A few days ago, he made a statement declaring that, in effect, his office was no longer a part of the executive branch. Now, this goes against what we've been taught in high school, but I'm calling to find out that if this becomes true, if this becomes accepted in Washington, what ramifications this would have for the political system and for Cheney as a person.
Well, Ken Rudin, the Constitution does give him a legislative role, does it not?
That's right. He's president of the Senate, and he can vote in case of a tie. But Democrats are not too happy about this, and that there's a move in Congress, and I think it is as early as today, that there's going to be some effort to strip Cheney's vice presidential office from some funding, considering the fact that he has nothing to do with the executive branch. So the Democrats are not taking this smilingly.
Thanks very much for the call, Andrew.
Well, thank you.
Let's talk about some of the new ads that are out. Some of the candidates are just beginning to begin their ads. This from the John Edwards campaign in New Hampshire.
Will we make America the country of the 21st century? That depends on all of us. It's not that we don't know what needs to be done to lift families out of poverty, to strengthen the middle class in this country. We know what needs to be done. To strengthen America is not just in the Oval Office. To strengthen America is in this room right now. It's the American people, and it's time for the President of the United States to ask Americans to be patriotic about something other than war.
I'm John Edwards, and I approve this message.
A message from the Edwards campaign that's begun broadcasting in New Hampshire. And Ken, not really the standard opening biographical ad, much more a message ad.
Well, certainly we don't need a biography for somebody who's well known to the American public, having run for president and vice president in the last cycle. But I thought the most interesting thing of that whole statement was that you mentioned the words New Hampshire. And the reason I say that is because many people think that John Edwards has been running to be president of Iowa. He has been living there basically since his vice presidential run in 2004. He's been spending a ton of money there. The feeling is that if he doesn't win there, then he's through. And he obviously wants to change that perception. He obviously wants to appeal to more people than just the folks in Iowa. And so he's running this ad in New Hampshire. And of course, a week later, it's his home state, his birth state of South Carolina. So he's going to extend his ad by to that state as well.
And now there's also an ad up for the non-candidate. Let's listen to this.
Yoo-hoo.
Mr. Hello. Gore.
Hey, Al.
Excuse me, sir. Mr. Gore.
Hello.
Hey, Al. It's the Vice President.
Mr. Gore, we need you for president.
We deserve a president we can respect.
We deserve a president we can respect. Who has experience.
And compassion.
Who is the most qualified.
Who is a proven leader.
Al Gore. Right on Iraq. Right on global warming. Right for the 21st century.
Join us at DraftGore.com and supporting Al Gore for the Democratic nomination for president.
Sign the petition at DraftGore.com.
Paid for by the committee to draft Gore. He won once. He can win again.
And have they sent this message to Al Gore?
Well, he's been hearing the message ever since 2000, of course. And, you know, you see these re-elect Gore president bumper stickers everywhere. But it also sounded like this ad was taped in a dorm room somewhere. but, you know, something, if you look at national polls and if Al Gore's name was included, you know, he's up there. He's, you know, really a lot of people feel that. Again, you know, there was a travesty about 2000. They feel that he was right on the war from the beginning, unlike Hillary Clinton, John Edwards, all the other folks who voted for the war in 2002. So there is a sentiment there. But most polls show that Democratic voters, by and large, are more happy or happier. Is that with the current Democratic field and Republicans, and that's why you also see a Fred Thompson, a big boomlet for Fred Thompson on the Republican side.
And finally, I want to play a piece of tape. This is from the conversation, if you can call it that. Ann Coulter at the center of a new controversy involving John Edwards and his wife, Elizabeth Edwards. Elizabeth Edwards took issue with comments that Ann Coulter made on MSNBC. She called into Chris Matthews' program, Hardball, to let Coulter know that.
On positions, we certainly disagree with nearly everything she said on your show today. But it's quite another matter for these personal attacks. The things that she has said over the years, not just about John, but about other candidates, lowers our political dialogue precisely at the time that we need to raise it. So I want to use the opportunity, which I don't get much because Ann and I don't hang out with the same people, to ask her politely to stop the personal attacks.
Okay, so I made a joke, 6 months ago, and as you point out, they've been raising money off of it for 6 months since then.
So this is yesterday morning, what you said about him.
I didn't say anything about him, actually, either time.
But you know that's not true. And what's more, this has been going on for some time.
And I don't mind you trying to raise money. I mean, it's better this than giving $50,000 speeches to the poor.
And shortly after that, another new plea from the Edwards campaign based on the conversation with Ann Coulter.
Well, a while ago, Ann Coulter made an anti-gay slur at John Edwards, and the more recent ones, I think in effect she said, I take back the anti-gay slur, but I hope he dies in a terrorist attack. I think this is beyond the pale, and the fact why people still have Ann Coulter on the air is just beyond besides me.
Red Ken Rudin, thanks very much. Why we have Ken? That's another question. Ken is NPR's political editor. Joins us every Wednesday for our Political Junkie segment. Again, you can read his latest column online at npr.org. Ken, thanks very much.
See you, Neil.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.